welcome to episode 426 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Welcome back, Richard.
It has been too long. 2 weeks of travel, and I missed 2 weeks of episodes and listened to you doing the episodes without me. That is sad. And it was particularly
sad for me too
these past 2 weeks, because you talked about stuff that I really wanted to talk about. I missed the death of Groove. I missed the confirmed death of Windows Phone. I mean, there's all this good stuff going on. I don't know if you call it good.
Wait a second.
Not good. All this stuff going on.
Right. And then last week, you know, the new streamers and stuff. Yeah, I wanted to have you on to talk about those things. I wanted to have anybody on to talk about those things, but that just didn't quite work out. So unfortunately, it is what it is. But we've got you back tonight, and there's plenty to talk about tonight.
Indeed.
Including some listener feedback. This was sent in to us via our email inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And this first one is from Rob. He says, "Hey guys, love the show as always. Unlike most people, I use Cortana quite a bit while sitting at my desktop or working on my laptop to open programs and play music. I've been thinking about adding a digital assistant to my media room and wanted your guys' advice. With the Harman Kardon Invoke slated to arrive at more than $150, that makes it a non-starter for me. I've already got great speakers to use, so I really just need something that'll hook into my existing AV receiver and playback through my speakers. I've seen that the Google Assistant and, we'll say, Amazon's voice devices integrate well with the streaming services, but do any of them allow you to playback local media? I've tried Spotify and Google Play Music, but what I found is that I already know what music I like. I've already purchased and meticulously cataloged it, and rarely find myself discovering anything new. I guess I'm getting old as I approach 40. It'd be nice to throw an Echo Dot or Google Home Mini in the room, but will either of these work for my situation? If not, do you have any suggestions other than hooking another PC up to my AVR? I've already got one hooked up because I'm still clutching on to Windows Media Center, but unfortunately it's running Windows 8 and Cortana is not available. Thanks for the help." I want to go to you first, Richard, because you've used the Amazon voice things a lot. Maybe this is a little bit of a spoiler for later. I just now finally have a Google Home. I don't think the Google Home ecosystem supports any sort of local media playback. What about the Amazon stuff?
Yeah, the same is true with the Amazon stuff, but there is a way around this. The thing is, it's going to cost you. So okay, my recommendation is that if you use the Google Home, that you get Google's Play service that includes the storage where you can sync your music library with the Google Play library. I forget what that's called. Amazon has a similar service, and I think they cost roughly $25 or $30 a year. Essentially, what you're doing is you're letting those services know what music you own, and if they have it, then they basically provide you with a copy of that in your virtual online library, or if they don't have it, they let you upload your version of it, and it goes into, again, your library. Now it's part of the music that Google sees or that Amazon sees when you're asking it to play music. So that might be a way to get around this, but like I said, it's around $25 or $30 a year if you want that online library syncing service.
In addition to paying for the Google Play or Amazon Prime Music service, right?
Yes, that is correct. I believe that is in addition to that music service. Now, I don't know if it's something that they include as part of the Google Play piece, but Amazon does not include that for free, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, actually. I had completely forgotten that both of these services have that type of feature. As we start to talk about the paying for the music service plus paying for the storage, I start to think that the cost of the Harman Kardon Invoke maybe not so bad when you stack it up against that other stuff, especially if you're talking about over the course of a couple of years.
Yeah. But, and do we know that it will play local music?
Well, that's where I was going with that, is I don't think that helps you in this situation either. So I have another really different kind of idea, and I don't have a specific solution for this because I didn't even think about this idea until right before we recorded tonight. He's using Windows Media Center. I know, I don't think I ever used any of them, but I know that there were utilities out there that would allow you to hook a microphone up to your Windows Media Center PC and voice control Media Center through your microphone. He could potentially do something like that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, possibly.
I know it's hard for both of us to think of Windows Media Center answers around this stuff. But yeah, that might be the best solution, and it's probably going to be the cheapest.
What's funny is that as you're saying this, I'm thinking to myself whether there is any sort of personal library music service on the Xbox, and there's really not.
Well, actually, that's not true. Duh. Da-da-da-da. Groove Music as a service and store is gone, or is going away. But the one aspect of the service, sort of, that they're keeping is the ability to upload all of your music to OneDrive and play it back through Groove. And Groove is still, the app will still be on the Xbox. But I'm not sure what the voice experience with Groove on the Xbox is right now. Yeah. I don't know that it's ever been as great as, you know, some of the features that are built into like the Google Home and the Echo devices.
No, absolutely not. Even when they incorporated Cortana, or called what was already on there suddenly Cortana, which is more realistically what they did, it didn't really change the experience in terms of making it easier to just from anywhere do what I've always wanted to be able to do, which is walk into the living room and say, hey, play such and such. And
right,
it still can't do it.
Yeah. Plus, if he doesn't have an Xbox, he doesn't say that he has an Xbox One. So that's going to cost him at least as much as a Harman Kardon Invoke. So I'm not sure that we have great answers here for you, Rob. I would look into what Windows Media Center can do for you. I would definitely check out those services that Richard suggested. And I think those are probably going to be your easiest option. You know, throw it all on Amazon and buy an Echo Dot for next to nothing and hook it up to your AVR. You're not really going to be able to go the Google route is actually a little bit more complicated because the new Google Home Mini doesn't have an audio out sort of thing like the Echo Dot does. So you would need a Google Home or Google Home Mini plus a Chromecast audio hooked into your AVR if you wanted to go the Google route.
Yeah, no, just as a clarifier, the Echo Dot does have the audio out capability.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Or you could even use Bluetooth if you wanted to, if you have Bluetooth in on your AVR, which my new receiver does, which is kind of nice.
Oh, that's true. And on the Bluetooth side, I'm not sure about the Google Home Mini, but I'm thinking it still can't because they want you to just use Chromecast for everything, despite the fact that it doesn't have Chromecast built in. It's weird.
All right.
Well, why don't we move on to our next message from John?
John says he has answers for Paul. And if I remember correctly, Paul was asking about the different services that Google has available because of the recent closures of Microsoft services and anticipating that, well, what if movies and TV goes next? Then what am I going to do? So John says, first of all, if you buy Google Play Movies, they will show up in your YouTube apps. And and on the web page as purchases. So I have actually confirmed this. If I have movies that I have previously synced through my once known as Disney Movies Anywhere service, they also show up as YouTube movies. And if I've ever purchased anything from Google Play that is a video because maybe they had a special video deal or something, it shows up under Google Play as, sorry, it shows up under YouTube as a movie that I can play under purchases. So that's kind of nice. I like that. It makes that stuff available through the purchases tab. Now, I kind of just hinted at this, but John also goes on to suggest that he may want to look into the new Movies Anywhere service. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute, because that's probably the biggest news in the entertainment space that impacts us that we want to talk about in video. And I also want to point out that Nick and others had already pinged me about this, because this is a pretty exciting service. So we will talk about it tonight. He goes on to say that as for music, when you subscribe to Google Music, you also get YouTube Red for free, which includes music videos. So I don't think there isn't a difference. I think he meant to say he doesn't think there is a difference between YouTube Music and Google Play Music. It's just that Google is confusing people with bad branding. Man, I'll say, you know, I've heard a number of people talk about YouTube Music and Google Play Music and get the two of them confused all the time.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So definitely very confusing there. But those services are kind of intermingled. He says, I hope this helps answer some of the questions about Google's offerings. So thanks for writing in. I love it when we have one listener helping out another listener with suggestions or answers to the questions that they have.
Absolutely. Absolutely love this community and the way they help each other out through all this. So thank you to John for answering Paul's questions.
And that's a good way of leading into the first thing we're going to discuss in this episode under the category of video, which is Movies Anywhere. So you may have heard me talk in the past about Disney Movies Anywhere, and we spoke about it most recently when we mentioned that Disney Movies Anywhere and Microsoft Movies and TV had broken up, that they no longer synced as a part of Movies and TV. And I suspect we now know why. Disney Movies Anywhere has morphed into a more generic product called Movies Anywhere, and they've brought on other studios. So it's no longer just the Disney franchises and the studios that they own. It also includes Sony and Universal and a bunch of others. It doesn't include everybody yet. It doesn't include Paramount, and it doesn't include Lionsgate. Not quite sure why they're not on board yet, but they're not. But what this means, if you remember how Disney Movies Anywhere worked, Movies Anywhere works pretty much the same way. You buy it in one place, and it shows up nearly everybody or everywhere else. And I say nearly because it depends on the licensing deal that the other retailers have with the studio that you're getting the movie from. Or sometimes it's specific to, like, if there's a movie that is put out by two different studios, it's specific to one of them and not the other. So you need to be careful about that. But essentially, if I buy movies in iTunes, then they will automatically sync, previously through Disney Movies Anywhere, now through Movies Anywhere, to Vudu, Google Play, and Amazon Video. That is really cool.
Yeah, and it's not just a one-way sort of thing like that. You know, I've bought, you know, a couple of things from Amazon Video. And now, as John pointed out in that email message, they all show up in YouTube for me. And anything that I've purchased in Vudu shows up in all of these places. Like, it's making all of them available everywhere for the most part.
Yeah, except not all and not everywhere. But other than that, it's really good. Now, so in all seriousness, this is a really good service. It is a little bit hampered right now by licensing deals, but not in a way that is significantly bothersome. What I have noticed is that I have a slightly different number of movies that appear in each of these services. So clearly not everything is syncing, and I can live with that. Hopefully that'll all be worked out at some point in time. But this is so much better than what we had just 2 weeks ago. This is a huge improvement. And what this means, and somebody brought this to my attention, I think it was actually in John's email, this means that all of those movies that I have in iTunes and only in iTunes can now also show up in Vudu. And you know what that means? That means less times that I'm away and I come home to movies that have been purchased that we already owned in the other service. That's what that means.
Doesn't this also mean that movies that you purchased through iTunes, you can watch on your Xbox now?
That's also what it means. And here's a really cool thing. Not all of the movies that you buy are the same, right? Some of them are standard def, some are high def, some are ultra high def. And if you bought a movie in ultra high def and it's available on another service in ultra high def, that will transfer too. So things that have been automatically upgraded in iTunes are going to show up in Vudu as UHD.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Really nice. So, you know, this is a really nice way of solving a big problem that everybody has had. This tries to do, well, actually, I would say this does what Ultraviolet tried to do, but it does it much, much better.
Right. So what does this mean for Ultraviolet? Like, is Ultraviolet just kind of irrelevant now because this kind of covers it for us? Or because the other thing that I wonder about, and you definitely know way more about this than I do, is when you go out and buy a Blu-ray, there's usually a digital code with it. And I think that it's normally a digital code that you can use for iTunes or for Ultraviolet.
Right.
Right?
Correct.
So how does that impact Movies Anywhere?
So instead of going to an Ultraviolet retailer now, what you can and probably should do is go to the Movies Anywhere site where you've created an account to link these things together and redeem your Ultraviolet code there. And it will then give you the copy everywhere that it's available. You could also still redeem it at Vudu, and it's going to show up on these other services if it's available on the other services. It just makes Ultraviolet much, much better now, because now those movies will replicate to the service that they weren't available on. You used to have to pick which service do I want my movie on in most cases. And now it'll just be everywhere, which is great. Now, what I have learned is that if you have an iTunes code or a studio specific code that gets translated into a code either on Ultraviolet or on iTunes. So for example, sometimes Sony would send out movies. I think Sony's the example I'm thinking of, or maybe it was Fox. And you'd have to go to their site, put the redeem code in there, and then they would direct you to whichever service you wanted and auto-populate an actual redemption code for one of those services. And that was so that you couldn't use the same code in multiple places. That kind of goes away now. This is not necessary. You go to one place, you put your code in, you don't have to pick the movie first, because Ultraviolet people, that was stupid. There was no good reason for that. So I'm really happy about this. Now, where can you watch it? If you're on an Xbox, you can watch it on Vudu or on YouTube, like you said.
Or Amazon.
Or on Amazon.
Right?
Right. I forgot you can get Amazon on the Xbox too. There are also Movies Anywhere apps that are just Movies Anywhere. So without all of the cruft that you get with the horrible Vudu experience, or if you don't want everything that's in YouTube that could distract you, or Amazon that might encourage you to buy new stuff, you could just go and Start the Movies Anywhere app if you have a Fire TV, a Roku, an Apple TV, an iOS or Android device, or a Fire tablet. So all of those devices have Disney Movies Movies Anywhere applications, and those can be used to redeem. They can be used to play back. You can even download the app or download the video in those apps and watch it offline if you want to. They really got this right. They finally solved what Ultraviolet could never really solve for years and years and years.
Right. And if you haven't done this yet, you need to sign up soon and start linking your accounts soon, because they've got a special promotion going on where if you link, I don't remember exactly how it works. I think if you link one account, you get two movies for free. Yep. And then if you link a second account, you get three more.
Yep.
And those movies are The Lego Movie, Big Hero 6, Jason Bourne, which is the worst of the Bourne movies, Ice Age, and the new Ghostbusters movie. So you get five movies for doing nothing but linking some accounts together.
And you want to know something crazy? Two of those movies, can't figure out why only two. Two of those movies appeared over on my Fandango account, which is linked through Ultraviolet.
Weird.
So that suggests that in addition to syncing movies through these services, that the movies that ultimately end up on Vudu are also getting synced through Ultraviolet.
So, Richard, I have one more question for you. It's not directly related to this, but I've been wondering for a while. So I want to get Wonder Woman. I've got a 4K TV, so I obviously want to get it in 4K. Now, thanks to Apple, which, God, that's not something I say very often. Thanks to Apple, we've started seeing the prices of the 4K movies drop down in price to $19.99.
Right.
So from Vudu, I can buy Wonder Woman in 4K for $19.99. And if I were to buy the Ultra HD Blu-ray, I get it in 4K, but that's like $30. It comes with a digital code. Do those digital codes on the 4K Blu-rays, are those good for 4K digital copies? Or are they only good for 1080p digital copies?
The answer is, nowadays, they usually are good for UHD copies if UHD copies are available online. They aren't always. I can confirm that Wonder Woman is.
Okay, awesome.
And I can confirm that that code will get you a UHD version of the video online.
Even better. Even better. All right, so that's great news, for basically everybody. But our next story is great news for anybody who's been thinking of or is already using the Plex application for their live TV and DVR service. This was sent into us. We totally missed this news.
And
it's because the only place it was posted was in Plex's support forums. So fortunately, Ray sent us a message to point this out to us. Everyone, including us, especially us, has been complaining that, you know, Plex's DVR solution works really well and stuff, but man, would it be so much better if it had a grid guide,
yep,
a traditional grid guide like we had in Windows Media Center, or you would have with any of your TiVo or cable box DVRs, any of that sort of thing. The problem, of course, is all of that stuff is patented by TiVo/Rovi, which means to implement it, Plex would have to pay money to get access to that patent to be able to do all of this. Well, Plex has heard enough feedback from their users and probably just from their own employees that they decided it makes sense for us to do whatever it takes to be able to give our users a grid guide. So they're working on it. And there's basically no details about this, but they are saying that they are planning to get this out in this calendar year. So that's pretty soon. That's less than 2.5 months.
Yeah, that's really cool. That means that they're going to be paying the fee on their side to TiVo to get that data and to make this work. I'm very happy about that. I want us to take some credit for that. We gave them a call to action a couple episodes ago. We specifically talked about this when we had John as our guest at the meetup and talked about, you know, wouldn't this be so much better if they had a guide? Let's get on that. They got on it.
They got on it. It's all us. It's all us, Richard.
Totally taking some credit. Some.
It's probably not all us, but yeah, we've definitely given them this feedback. All right, one more Plex story here, and that is that we've been talking about Plex as they've rolled out support for live TV and DVR stuff across their many, many supported platforms. And one of the big ones that hasn't had support for this has been Roku, and they're rolling that out now. You will now be able to watch live TV through Plex on a Roku device. Of course, all of this live TV stuff in Plex requires a Plex Pass subscription. That isn't changing. And to do this in Roku, you're going to need to be in the Roku preview channel, because this is all still beta-y sort of stuff on the Roku. It doesn't sound like the DVR stuff is there. This article from Plex is pretty thin in terms of actual content, but the live TV aspect is definitely there. So you'll at least have that. And once they've got that, I'm sure the rest of it won't be far behind. All right, well, let's move on to our gaming news. And frankly, a whole lot of Microsoft news, well, basically for the rest of the night here, because we are now seeing the Fall Creators Update shipping on the Xbox and on Windows 10 PCs all this week. So let's start with the Xbox. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this because we've talked about this as it's rolled out through the Insider Preview Rings, and there's lots of videos that you can go and check out, or just turn your Xbox on, because everybody's got it now. Right now, you should have it. If you don't, you probably just need to go force an update or something. So brand new UI, they've changed the home screen so that it's now these giant content blocks that you can completely customize, whether you want it to be focused on specific games or apps. They've changed how many pins. You can have 40 pins. 40 seems like more than what would be useful for pins. And once you get past, I think it's 15 or so, the icons get really small. So I'm not sure how useful 40 pins is, but you know, somebody must want it or else they wouldn't have done it. They've also changed how the guide works. That was the thing where on the home screen, if you press to the left, it would give you the big swipe out menu from the left-hand side. You don't get to it by, you know, arrowing over to the left. You just press the Xbox guide button on your remote or your controller. It now kind of drops down from the top. And instead of it being, you know, navigation icons down the left with all of the content on the right, it's just moving left and right to navigate between the sections. And then all of the content in those sections, you go up and down to access.
I seem to remember you said that you didn't really like this layout as much as the old layout for some functions, that it made some functions harder to accomplish.
Yeah, I really don't like the way that they've changed the friends aspect, because now when you arrow over to friends, it shows you a count of how many friends are online, and it shows you a count saying, you know, maybe the first thing says 15 friends online, and then the next one will say 10 friends in 3 games. So if I select the first thing that just says 15 friends, it shows me the full list like we used to see of all the friends who are online and what they're doing. That means it's an extra click now to see that list, which is what I really want to see.
Right.
Or if I go down to the thing that says 10 friends in 3 games, it'll group them and say, like, you know, these 3 friends are playing Overwatch and these 2 friends are playing NHL and, you know, whatever. And that's cool. But again, it's just a bunch of extra clicking. And they've done some cleanup stuff, some better categorization stuff. They've got, you know, if you get a party invitation, it now shows up in the multiplayer section of the guide instead of just showing up with all of the other notifications. That kind of makes sense, but it seems like a lot of stuff in this guide now requires more clicks and just more things than it used to take. So it's cleaner in some ways. I like some aspects of it, but it's not necessarily better in some ways. Another way that I think it's not better, that I think our listeners especially will dislike, is background audio playback is now kind of weird to get to. It used to be if you were doing background audio, you'd go to the guide and it would just show up right there, or at least you'd go all the way down to the bottom and it would be there. It was one of those two. I don't remember exactly. But now, so like yesterday, I had Spotify playing and my daughter was like, all right, well, I'm going to switch to YouTube. And so she opened the YouTube app. Spotify kept playing because it was doing background audio and she couldn't figure out how to make Spotify stop. And it took me a minute to figure out how to make Spotify stop because it doesn't just display the play and pause and volume and all that stuff in the guide on its own. What you have to do is go to the guide and then Spotify will be one of the, you know, recent apps. It'll probably be the second one in the list in this use case. You click that and it doesn't open Spotify. It then displays the music playback controls. It's weird and not a good weird.
Yeah, that does seem weird.
They've made some other enhancements to how your Xbox behaves when it goes idle. And I wanted to actually read the quote directly from the article over at Major Nelson's website about this. It says, when your Xbox One is idle, time-sensitive activities and statuses are visible from far away. You know why they're far away? Because now, when your Xbox is idle and you get, say, a notification that a friend just came online, instead of it being a small little box at the bottom center of the screen, it is half of the TV. It is enormous. It takes the entire right half of the screen, fills it with your accent color, and then shows that player's profile picture and says their username and that they're online. Yeah, you're not going to miss these notifications, guys.
Wow.
It's not going to be possible. It's fine. Whatever. So other interesting and cool things that maybe we haven't talked as much about that is definitely worth noting. They're adding in some functionality to support environments where people might have multiple Xboxes or will be getting multiple Xboxes. Like maybe you're buying an Xbox One X in a few weeks. You will be able to transfer games and apps from one Xbox to another across your home network. This is great. It means you don't have to re-download all of those gigantic games. You know, Forza Motorsport 7 is like 90 gigabytes. You don't want to have to re-download that if you don't have to. So that's a really cool feature. They're also making it so that you can easily transfer all of this stuff, including all of your settings and things, via an external hard drive if you just want to go that route. So that's really good. They've redesigned the Mixer tab to make that a little bit better if you're into Mixer. I'm obviously seeing lots of complaints about there from people who are like, I don't care about Mixer. Why are you making this such an emphasis? Well, it's because they own Mixer. It makes sense. And then another thing that I just found out about via Reddit right before the show started is with this release of the Xbox software, all of those voice commands that you used to say via Kinect from the original days, all the pre-Cortana voice commands that all started with Xbox, almost all of them are gone now.
Hmm.
You basically have to switch to Cortana if you want to use your voice to control your Xbox now. And there's a lot of technical reasons about what underlying APIs they use and how the old Xbox stuff didn't work for controlling apps that were written as UWPs and all that stuff. But I don't know that they've made Cortana any better because I never actually turned it on. So I guess I'm going to have to turn this on and see how it works now. But now that we have a Harmony, we barely even use the voice commands for anything anymore.
So you want to know something kind of funny? If I remember correctly, to get the Dolby Atmos stuff to work properly, I believe I had to turn off Cortana voice commands.
What?
Yeah, I think there was something where it was a conflict. So I'm curious if that's still an issue or not. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, that would not be cool to have to basically choose between Cortana and Dolby Atmos stuff.
Right. Right, exactly.
Not cool at all. All right, well, let us know what you think of the new, I don't know if they actually call it Fall Creators Update. I think they're just calling it the Fall Update for Xbox One. Let us know what you think of it via the comments or email or any of the other ways that you're used to getting a hold of us. And then let's real quick just jump into this week's Deals with Gold and the Spotlight Sale. A lot of really good games at good prices here. Witcher 3 Complete Edition, that's all of the DLC included for $20. Ghost Recon Wildlands, one of the biggest games of the year. It's half off at $30. If you never got around to playing Fallout 4, you can get just Fallout 4 for $20, or the Game of the Year Edition, which is all of the extra content included, for $40. All of the latest sports games from EA, so that's Madden, NHL, and NBA Live, are all on sale right now. And on the Xbox 360 side, one title worth pointing out, Red Dead Redemption, the original one, is on sale for $9.89. So definitely worth picking up if you've not played Red Dead, because the next one is coming out next spring. So check that out if you haven't and if you're into those types of games. And a quick update on Games with Gold for October. Now that we're in the second half of October, things are shifting a little bit. On Xbox One, you can still get Gone Home all month long. You can also get the Turing Test now, because we're in the second half of October. That's another Xbox One title. And then on the 360 side, but playable on your Xbox One via backwards compatibility, is Medal of Honor Airborne. So we mentioned that the Fall Creators Update is available on Xbox One. It's also available on Windows 10 now, rolling out to theoretically everybody, but we know from previous updates that they kind of slow roll all of this stuff. But if you want to force it and get it early, or get it now, you can. Again, not going to dig into all of the details here. It's not all super relevant, but I wanted to hit on a couple of things. This is the release that brings support for all of those mixed reality headsets that we've been talking about. There's a whole bunch of them. Most of them are available now to use with your PCs. Some of them are coming later. Windows Central actually has a really good article comparing all of the different headsets that are available, when they're coming, what the prices are, what the features are. It's a nice breakdown. So if you're considering a mixed reality headset, definitely want to check out that article, because mixed reality, even though it's not really mixed, it's still basically just virtual reality at this point. It's cheaper here than some of your other options in the past, like Oculus Rift or HTC Vive. So check that stuff out. A couple of other things to point out. The Photos Remix app functionality is now in the Photos app inside of the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. That includes all of that nifty video remix stuff where you could say, take these photos and make a video remix out of it, and it would apply music and all these cool transitions. That's all there. And that's fun and neat. And sometimes it does an okay job with that, and sometimes it does a terrible job with that. I'm sure it's better than when I used it a few months ago. One of the things that they've added, apparently since the last time I checked out this app, is they have a basic video editor built right into it now. And it sounds like this thing might actually be a pretty decent replacement for Windows Movie Maker. So I'm actually really interested in, making sure that I've got this latest update on my Surface and checking that out, because that could be really cool, really useful for doing, quick video stuff. So that's cool. And then of course on the game front, they're constantly making more improvements to game functionality in Windows 10. They've made some changes to the Xbox game bar. They've made it easier to turn on or off game mode and other things there from within the bar. They've added more settings inside of the main settings things, including Xbox network settings. So you can see, you know, how well your computer is communicating with the Xbox Live network. So is, you know, what is your NAT type and things like that are all visible in settings on your Windows 10 PC now. So that's really, really nice if you're trying to do all of this Xbox game stuff on your PC. And then for you ultra hardcore nerds out there who love looking at the CPU graphs and the memory graphs and all of that stuff in Task Manager, they've finally added your GPU to Task Manager so you can see what your GPU is doing. I think that's going to be really cool. I'm looking forward to checking that out just because it's fun to look at those.
So I have a question about the Photos Remix app. This is brand new for this release, right? This is something that didn't exist prior to this fall update.
Well, so, and my notes are a little unclear. It's not a separate app. It's functionality built into the Photos app. So it's an updated Photos app that has all of this functionality. But to actually answer your question, yes, all of that functionality is new in the fall creators update.
Okay. So I guess my question is, I know that one of the things, we haven't really talked about it because this isn't too applicable to the entertainment space, but one of the things that they were talking about was how this release includes some of the new design language. I think it's called Fluid Design or Fluent Design, something like that.
Yeah, Fluent. Yep.
Is the Photos app one of the apps that kind of got that treatment, or is this still very much like an old world Windows app?
If by old world Windows app, you mean like a Battleship Gray and, you know, file and edit menus up at the top left, it's not like that. But I don't know for sure if it's gotten the full Fluent treatment since I haven't tried it in since some of the earliest releases of the fall creators update. I just haven't been playing with it that much on my Surface Pro, which is what I use for my Windows Insider builds.
Okay.
Looking at some screenshots, it doesn't look super fluent-y though.
Okay. I'm just curious. I mean, I'm eager to see what they're doing here. This is supposedly the actual official design direction and guidance that they're giving developers overall, like really as comprehensively as they can since the Metro days, as far as I understand. So,
right.
I think this is much needed because we've kind of been hobbling along on a constantly evolving set of guidelines, as you and I know all too well, as we continually reference those constantly changing guidelines for UWPs.
Right.
Cool.
One other thing that I wanted to just real quick mention, it's not in the show notes, but it would definitely fall under the category of other Microsoft news. Today, Microsoft announced a new Surface Book, the Surface Book 2 laptop. It sounds awesome. They've got a 13-inch version and a 15-inch version, Core i5 or Core i7, quad-core i7 with, you can get it with a GTX 1050 or a GTX 1060, depending on the model that you get. Like, those would be beastly laptops, and they ought to be because they start at $1,500 a piece. But they sound really, really stinking awesome.
So just to clarify, I think you said Surface 2 laptop. These are Surface Book 2 devices. Right?
Yeah, I thought that's what I said, but maybe I didn't.
I might
but
have yes, misheard
Surface
you.
Book 2. Yeah, not Surface 2 like the original Surface 2 tablet.
All I care about is the hinge smaller?
In the pictures I saw, the hinge didn't really look any different. Yeah, that surprised me. I thought they would change the hinge, but they didn't really. They've apparently made it more stable. They've made it easier to open with one hand, but it still looks basically the same. It's still got the big gap and all that stuff.
All right. Well, I'll wait to hear the report on whether or not we find out if Mary Jo can lap it.
I don't think Mary Jo can lap any laptop.
I don't know what it is. She doesn't Mary Jo seem Foley. To be able to sit a laptop on her lap. And that's one of her biggest complaints about many of these things. I can totally see it with the regular Surface tablets and any of these other tablets that are kind of back heavy. And I think the issue is that if they're designed with the assumption that they're going to be sitting 100% flat when the lid's open, and any tweak from that is just enough to kind of knock it over, I can see how that'd be problematic.
It sounds like this one, it may not be as bad in that department, because what I think they did was pulled more of the batteries out of the screen slash tablet part and put them more in the base, in the keyboard base. So it should make it less top heavy.
Yep.
And it did change battery life. Like they say that on some of these models, it's 17 hours of battery life, which is awesome. But in tablet mode, can't remember if it was either, I think it was 5 hours of battery life if it's in tablet mode, which isn't really all that great. But if they did that so that they could make this thing less top heavy as a laptop, I think they probably made the right decision, because I don't think most people with Surface Book laptops are using them as tablets all that often.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I mean, it's a nice capability, but I wouldn't really know.
Right. Okay, Richard, that is it for all of our news for the week. Why don't we get into what's been going on in your entertainment center? Now, I would think that because you've been traveling for 2 weeks, it wouldn't be much. But by looking at our notes, that's not actually the case.
No, and remember, when I travel, sometimes, depending on the scenario, I get an opportunity to watch some video. And when I'm doing long-haul trips, that's especially true. I was on the West Coast both of the last 2 weeks that I was gone. So first, though, I want to start at home. And one of the things that I had wanted to do was upgrade my HDMI cables, because I was having problems with some of my output for my Xbox not registering on the receiver. And more importantly, I would look at it a different way. When I went to look in my Xbox at the video settings and what my system was capable of rendering, everything that I should be able to do wasn't registering. And so friend of the show, John Biggs, had recommended that I look into some new HDMI cables. So I went out to Amazon and I bought myself a couple of the TerraGrand HDMI 2.0 high-speed cables. They have the HDCP 2.2 stuff on them. And turns out that fixed my compatibility problem. So what I've done is I've now hooked my Xbox directly into my receiver. And that gives me Atmos again. I'm very happy about that because I couldn't get it over audio return channel. Interestingly, that also gets me some degree of generic HDR.
What do you mean by generic HDR?
My TV, when I play Blu-rays or UHD Blu-rays that all have HDR, register HDR. It doesn't say HDR 10. It doesn't say Dolby Vision. It just says HDR.
Okay, well, it's HDR 10 because there's only like two Ultra HD movies out there that even, on Blu-ray at least, that even have Dolby Vision yet. I know Minions is one, and I know the new Spider-Man movie is one, but pretty much everything else is HDR 10.
So
they've all got
HDR
10.
Here's the thing, is I understand it from the folks at Onkyo when I was talking with them about the HDR upgrades. Because I said, you know, your receiver advertises that it passes through HDR, but it doesn't pass through HDR 10 or Dolby Vision, the two standards that people are using. And they said, yeah, but technically it still can support HDR, and HDR doesn't have to be one of those two flavors. Now, I don't necessarily understand what that means. And I can tell you that when I get an HDR 10 title, that the screen says HDR 10. So something is registering as HDR, but not as one of those specific things. And I don't understand what or why, but I'm not going to complain because my picture looked great when I was watching movies this week.
Well, I guess that's all that matters in the end, but that is super weird.
It is super weird. Weird. Okay. In the meantime, let's talk about some stuff I've been watching. Firefly and Game of Thrones. I'm going to be watching some more Game of Thrones tonight, and I'll be talking about that a little bit more later, but not just yet. A couple more weeks yet. And then I finished Broadchurch Season 3. I'm going to miss that show. I liked that show. Great character development. Great, hard, really hard to watch and hard to experience storylines. And I think they did a great job with that show. I finished Episodes. That is over now. That was the Matt LeBlanc series on Showtime, I believe it was, or HBO, I don't remember which, and Jessica Jones Season 1. And I figured, well, I want to watch the new thing, but, you know, I'm kind of OCD about this stuff, and I can't watch Defenders if I haven't seen all of the lead-in stuff, so I decided I would start watching Iron Fist. You know what? I've only watched the first episode, but it didn't suck. It wasn't,
oh my gosh,
as good as the other stuff, but it didn't suck.
There's just no way that statement is true. I didn't actually watch Iron Fist. Everyone that I ever talked to said that Iron Fist was terrible. I watched the first few episodes, the first probably half of the season of The Defenders, and every time Iron Fist opened his mouth, I hated it. Like, he's just not a good character. I can't imagine that you're actually going to stick with this show. I don't think you should.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. Something that I don't think I'm going to stick with. This year, we have a revived version of Will and Grace with all the same original characters doing exactly the same jokes that they did about 20 years ago. You know what? It's not as funny anymore. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to keep that alive, because just the novelty of it all isn't going to be enough. I am still watching The Orville. I think that is a great show. It is evolving very nicely. And again, they're doing the hard-hitting storylines like Star Trek always had, where there's usually some sort of social message behind the storyline, as silly as it is. And I think that's kind of awesome. Watching Big Bang Theory, Modern Family, This Is Us, and The Flash has started again, as well as Arrow. Hawaii Five-O, I tried to watch, but it turns out that the guide data that we're all getting for, well, at least that I'm getting in my area for my DVR service on Plex, has Hawaii Five-O incorrectly listed with original Hawaii Five-O reruns.
Oh, no.
And that is just ridiculous, because they even spell it differently. So I'm not quite sure what the problem is there. Hopefully they'll figure that out. But I wanted to let people know in case they want to watch it, because, well, I had to find out the hard way by having a couple weeks that didn't record. And then I had to watch it on the CBS app, which has the ads, and yuck. So then while I was on a plane, I was watching some stuff that I had downloaded, and that included more of Horace and Pete's. That's the Louis C.K. thing where he's a serious actor on basically a filmed stage play. Still very good. Still enjoying that. I tried the series called Great News. I watched the first episode. Not all that funny. It's a sitcom. Not that great. Watched the first episode of last season's Van Helsing. Interesting spin on Van Helsing if you're into that. We kind of equated it with Walking Dead. It's kind of like Van Helsing meets Walking Dead. So not sure about that. Speaking of weird supernatural stuff, we watched the remake movie of The Mummy. That also didn't suck. It was
really
entertaining. So, we rented it. I'm glad I didn't buy it.
The reviews destroyed it. I want to say that the Rotten Tomatoes score was the teens.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Terrible, terrible reviews. Terrible reviews. But, you know, it wasn't horrible as weird supernatural action movies go. All right. The highlight of my last 3 weeks of entertainment is that I finally saw Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
What a great, great film.
It's really good.
It is so good. Now, we knew what my conflict was on this, right? If I was going to watch Wonder Woman, I had to go back and watch the prequels.
All the other terrible DC movies.
So I watched Man of Steel. And you know what? I didn't give that a fair shake first time around. I fell asleep when I watched it the first time, and I blamed it on the movie. Turns out, if you're paying attention, again, it didn't suck. It wasn't terrible. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was fairly well done. Batman versus Superman, on the other hand, is absolutely awful. There's just nothing redeeming about it except for the fact that Wonder Woman's in it. And I think that it was worth watching that to be able to watch Wonder Woman with some backstory and to get the couple of subtle references that they had in there to the prior movie. So I liked that. I thought that was pretty cool. The other thing that most people didn't pick up in Batman versus Superman is that they pretty much establish the team for and the actors in Justice League way back in Batman versus Superman. So I think that's kind of cool. I did not expect that. Anyway, Wonder Woman, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Damn, it's good. And then finally, I wanted to just kind of follow up on the music situation. I am still just relying on Amazon Prime Music. It's free with the Prime service, and they have a whole lot of stuff there, including like one of the top new songs right now on actually a couple charts. A new song from Tim McGraw and Faith Hill that just came out, and they had that on the new service. So I thought that was pretty cool. I want to make a recommendation that a friend of mine, Anthony, from the Ritual Misery podcast, recommended on his show. It's a band called Postmodern Jukebox, and they do swing and crooner style adaptations of pop songs. And it is hysterical and awesome in so many different ways. That's also available for free on Amazon Prime Music. I'm sure it's also on other music services. But check that out, Postmodern Jukebox. And you can hear what Gangsta's Paradise sounds like in swing style.
That sounds fun. Sounds like a lot of fun. All right. Well, I've got a few things to talk about here. It shouldn't take super long, but I've been playing around more with my HD Home Run DVR and my Plex DVR. I would still say that the HD Home Run DVR is the primary DVR, but I've been trying to give the Plex side of it a little bit more usage. So I've been recording a couple of shows with HD Home Run, but the way that I have it all set up on the same NVIDIA Shield TV box, everything that the HD Home Run records shows up in my Plex library. So I've been trying to record The Gifted, the new HBO show, sorry, not HBO, the new Fox show set in the X-Men universe. And when I first sat down to watch the first episode, I thought, let's use Plex. I've got on everything. Why not? Well, it's recorded TV, which means it's got commercials. So I got to the commercials and wanted to 30-second skip past them. Plex has 30-second skip, but I think I might have been watching in a web browser, so it's doing transcoding and all that stuff. I completely understand what Jim Collison was telling us at the meetup when he was talking about how he converts all of his recorded TV to MP4 files, because this transcoding process can take a while unless the Plex server has buffered out enough of the video ahead of time. Otherwise, skipping through commercials with Plex can be really, really annoying. So after the first commercial break for that episode, I pulled up my HD Home Run app and watched the rest of the episode that way. And when you get to a commercial there, it's just bam, 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 bam. And I'm through the commercial break. No worrying about buffering and all that craziness. It's just streaming it straight, and it works just like you would expect it to on any other sort of regular DVR service. So, I mean, that's just one anecdotal sort of situation, but it's definitely something to keep in mind as you might be trying to decide between these couple of options for DVR service.
I do want to mention that we had someone send us a message through Twitter saying that we could always use the optimize feature on the server, which allows you to kind of create pre-rendered versions of the movies that you have or the shows that you've recorded, and they're optimized for whatever target device you expect to be watching them on. So that is an option, and that would give you smoother playback, skipping, and probably even be better at the thumbnail support that is an option in the server settings for Plex.
Mm. Good point. So I had a coworker ask me today at work. He and I both have the same exact Vizio M55D0 M-series TV from last year. And our listeners will probably remember that I had to send mine back for a replacement a couple months ago. I think it was in September, because I got that weird vertical black bar on the screen, and it was happening pretty regularly. I think I mentioned that I got the new one, and then a few days later, the black bar thing happened again. But life's been insane, and I didn't do anything about it. It hasn't happened again.
Hmm.
I'm not really sure what to say about that, but I'm glad that it's not happening anymore. And because I got it at Costco, even if it does, I've still got more than another year left on the warranty. But he asked me, hey, how's your TV been working? You know, come to think of it, I haven't had any issues. That's really weird, but really good. So I'll take it. And then lastly, I mentioned briefly earlier in this episode that I got a Google Home. I don't know if you saw this deal, Richard, amongst all of your traveling, but briefly, very briefly, the New York Times was doing this crazy promotion where you could sign up for the New York Times digital edition or whatever the heck they call it, where you can just view the New York Times on their website.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be like sign up for a year of that. And that would run you, I think it was $16.99 a month. And if you do that, they send you a free Google Home.
Wow.
But they only build you monthly. So you pay for 1 month at $16.99, and they send you a Google Home right away.
And you can cancel at any time. Wow.
So I got my Google Home, and earlier this week, I canceled my New York Times subscription.
No, did you really?
And for $17, I have a Google Home now.
So is it a real full Google Home, or is it the Home Mini?
It's not the Home Mini. It's the full Google Home.
Wow.
I had it in a box for 2 days before I convinced Jen to let me actually set it up. I think she's still a little on the fence about having devices that are constantly listening and all that in our house. And what I kept saying was,
You have an Xbox.
There is that. But what I said was, I totally understand, especially when it's Google. But we both have Android phones that are doing the same thing, and our phones are always with us.
Right.
If we put the Google Home in the kitchen or in the bathroom, at least it's only listening in those places. Our phones are always with us and always listening.
Yeah.
So I convinced her to let me put it in the bathroom so that we can at least listen to music and news updates and stuff like that while we're in the bathroom. And my reasoning for the bathroom, other than just, you know, it's nice to listen to music or podcast or whatever while getting ready in the morning, is having a voice assistant when you're in the shower seems like a really great thing, because that's when I think of everything, right? Now I can just poke my head out of the shower and say, hey, dingus, as James liked to say, add such and such reminder or whatever. I haven't actually done that yet, but I could.
That makes a lot of sense. If I remember correctly, I think that's also one of Stacey Higginbotham's use cases.
Mm.
The
probably
assistant in the bathroom. It's great to have while you're getting ready. And I think Tom Merritt talks about that too. Yeah, it's a very smart location. I've almost bought one for the bathroom, not a Google Home, but an Amazon Echo. And I haven't yet. I may give in if it gets discounted down to $40 again at Christmas time.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, the other thing that has been a concern for me is how good would it sound when listening to music? And I'm pretty happy with how the Google Home sounds. It's pretty decent. It's not you know, like my stereo speakers hooked up to my TV, but it's way better than any Bluetooth speakers that I've used. So that's good.
Cool. And yeah. Now it can be used as a Bluetooth speaker as well.
Yeah, I have no plans of doing that, but I have used it as a Chromecast target because that's way easier than mucking with Bluetooth.
Yep.
So one last thing before we get out of here. It was this last weekend that I ran that 6.6K race in Pittsburgh to benefit the Mary Lemieux Foundation, a cancer research organization. And a whole bunch of you donated to that. Including you, Richard. So thank you to all of you who helped me raise over $300. That was really, really awesome. And I, again, really want to thank all of you because I do really, really appreciate all of your help in doing that. It was a great event for a great cause and a wonderful, wonderful weekend in Pittsburgh. All right. So let's wrap this thing up. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're at Facebook at facebook.com/the DMZ. That one's nice and easy. We've also got some other podcasts. Richard, you've got your home automation show that's called Home On. What's the latest with Home On?
I'm so excited. The next episode is with Rose Thibodeau from Home Alarm Report, I believe is the name of her site. And she is someone that we cite regularly because she is the resource if you want a comprehensive comparison of different home systems, either hub systems or alarm systems, what have you. She's great for the DIYer. So excited to have her on. That'll be coming up in a couple days. And as I mentioned previously, I was at the Smart Kitchen Summit last week. So expect the Don't Brick My Fridge session in an upcoming episode of Home On that will be next out after the episode with Rose.
Cool. And then my other podcast, Story Players. Last week, we had two episodes for you. Another in our continuing Mass Effect Andromeda series. And we played Tacoma last week. That was a really fun episode to record. And then this week, we're finally getting the next episode in the Life is Strange Before the Storm series. So that game comes out Thursday. We will be playing it and recording our thoughts on it this weekend. So look for that very, very early next week. And then also one of the last few episodes in our Mass Effect Andromeda series coming out Friday. We're done. We finished that game this weekend. We've got a couple more episodes to release for you guys. We are recording the final episode this week. So very much wrapping up Mass Effect Andromeda. And that's been fun too.
That's very cool. You know, following your kind of staggered story arcs that you have with multiple things going on reminds me of watching Doctor Who and trying to keep track of all of these stories that end up coming back like 10 episodes later. And you're like, wait a minute, who is that person again? Why do I care about Bad Wolf?
Huh. Well, if I had ever watched Doctor Who, I might get some of those references, but I haven't and I don't have any intentions to. So, but lastly, I will share that we do record the show live most weeks. We didn't the last couple of weeks without Richard, but we did tonight. That is normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We use Mixer. Follow us on Twitter to know when that's happening or subscribe to us on Mixer to know for sure when we are going live and you can join the chat room and participate that way. But that's going to do it for episode 426. He's Richard Gunther and I'm Josh Pollard. Thank you for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.